Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio, welcome inside Hour 3 of the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
Yes, sir.
As we celebrate the Baylor Bears national championship beating Gonzaga 86-70, just one of the big topics going on today. We have the Sam Darnold trade, Fernando Tatis's injury. We have a lot to get to, but clearly this is the big story right now. Usually, every year, we are impressed, we are blown away, we are full of emotion every time we see one shining moment, right? Every time we see it. And this had to be one of the worst. I don't know I've seen a worse one shining moment than what they just had up on screen. Right now, yes, you're dealing with, you can't have fans, right? So the crying fans aren't really there like they normally are. Usually the one little kid who's wearing all the gear and he's just crying, going, oh, I don't know. Oh, so some of that's missing. I get it. But the levels were really off, right? Like the levels were really low in the beginning.
There wasn't enough Luther. Yeah.
And the levels are low, and then it ends so abruptly, and it goes bang right into a car commercial.
Hey,
like there's no sell, breathe.
I got you.
Let it breathe and then go into the car commercial, and it ended so abruptly. And I was like, oh my God, that's really ugly. Here, we're going to play it for you right now. This is the version off of CBS, the end of one shining moment, and just to tell you how abruptly it ended and went right into the car commercial. Go ahead, let's roll it.
Let's make a little history tonight in Indianapolis. Butler. Oh, right in the heart. Coach Drew and Baylor complete college basketball's greatest rebound and rebuild with a championship.
That's a pretty tight spot.
Watch this.
And then back. We're right into a car. There's no breathing. There's no excitement. Because, look, the national championship game always gets shorted because you only have so much time to put in plays from this game. And so I get that. But, wow, there was no breathing. There was no, hey, we're going to show a lot of foot. We're going to show a lot of people waving. It's just this one long confetti shot and then, bam, right into the car commercial. We're gonna go that fast right into it.
Yeah, it's jarring. There's no question about it. But you know what? Sell. You've got an audience that stayed with you for the tradition. You know, as Jim Nance is going to go off and do a tradition like unlike any other as he ends the week. Why not do it here? Saying, hey, here's one that everybody sticks around for, and they want to see who. I bet you they paid top dollar for that being that first ad coming out of one shining moment. Love to see that check clear. Like, how fast can we get out? 2.7 second. Not fast enough. Put an extra zero at the end. Okay, 1.4. Go.
Yeah, you normally look, one shot is so much fun. We play the song all the time. I hit the post on it because, you know, it's one of the things I do better than 99.9% of the population. I just saw, like, wow, this really, it you really just kind of, you know, okay. Well, look,
you also just put that you've got a list of things.
Yeah. Well, there's a list of things I do better than anybody else.
A list of things that you do better than virtually the rest of the world. By the way, the other thing that bothered me, and I'm starting to see this pick up a little, man, why not? You know what really grinds my gears? The fact that they kept playing all the play-by-play. Just let the play work. You've got editing software. We've got it there in the studio. You can take the announcers out and let the play call itself. Come on. There's people in the stands.
Yeah, but sometimes the play-by-play adds to it. You want Jim Nance's call at the end, the rebound, the win. I just like a little bit more than just, hey, here's confetti, and there's no room in the back seat of this car. Oh, you got to get a new Buick. That's what I have to wear. I just wanted a little bit more than that. And also, I want to be able to hear it and have the levels not be so crazed in the beginning.
Yeah, the 16-point victory, I didn't need the final call.
Yeah, but it's the triumph. It's the punctuation. Hey, they win. I mean, look, they won by 50 bleeping points.
Punctuation.
What did you
want
to put in there?
Yeah, you could go back to the 15 minute mark of the first half and say, hey, this game's over. It's a final. Because they never challenged.
I mean, it's not like, we're going to do. We don't care about this. We're just going to show Jalen Suggs' three that beat UCLA over and over and over again, okay?
Well, then
we're
not going to have anything done that with the tournament. It's like, yeah. They won the Baylor wins the title. But let me tell you, here's all the other great moments of the tournament that you'll remember for years. Unless you won't. Right? In the individual school markets, you're going to remember, here's a big shot from Juzang. Here's a big shot from Jaquez here in our greater Los Angeles sphere. Obviously, the Suggs shot, a big deal. And then you're like, the final game, Baylor just beat the tar off.
Yeah, you're not going to remember any plays from it. You know, I mean, it was a dominant victory from top to bottom. But this
team rebounding
will be
is what we'll remember.
Yes, that's what it's going to be. Hey, you know what? Let's talk about team rebounding, because that was really sexy, man. I like team rebounding. The play of the tournament was the Jalen Suggs three. All right, because it was, I realize I'm prisoner of the moment a bit, but I don't remember another game that I watched quite the way I did. I watched that one was probably Duke Kentucky in 92. This doesn't mean there weren't any other great games in the NCAA tournament. Now, of course, just a couple of years ago, you had great games. Villanova, North Carolina came down to a three at the end. Oh my God. We had Jenkins on the show after he made it, and he couldn't even speak. He was so excited. But that game with so much at stake, Duke Kentucky in the Leitner shot, I mean, people forget what a great game it was leading up to it. I mean, that was probably the best college basketball game that I had ever seen. And then here's another game where this wasn't just a close game. You got both teams shooting 58%. It is clutch shot after clutch shot. It's how does Juzang make that? My God, the stones on that guy for that. Oh, my goodness, look at this block and up and down. And Timmy fills the lane and goes in. I mean, it was an unbelievable back-and-forth game where nobody missed. And you have an incredible buzzer beater from 40 feet out that banks in. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's probably the best tournament game combination of how well the game was played with the highest amount of stakes, probably since Duke Kentucky in 92, and that's the game everybody's going to remember. So for Gonzaga fans, while it's kind of a, you know, not really a silver lining because you were 31-0 and you lost, I can say, hey, what's the tournament going to be remembered for? It's going to be remembered for that game. When they look back and there's 30 for 30s and whatever they're doing, looking back at great moments in college basketball history, we look at the 2021 NCAA tournament, that's the game everybody's going to talk about. That's the game everybody's going to remember. Everyone remembers how it ended, where they were when they saw it, their reaction when it happened. That's the game. It's not going to be the game a couple of nights later.
Well, that's it. All the sizzle, all the shine came in that game, and UCLA making its run, right? So you get the activation of the LA market, and certainly just many, many people looking to roast Calipari. And how did this guy get away from your program? And he was good, and he was all classy, and everything he posted online of, hey, you're always family, and that's all fine and good, but it made for a great subplot, and that was a fantastic game on a Saturday night out here in California. I know a lot of the restaurants and some of the bars, they put the TVs back up. I've seen some really interesting and creative ways to try to maximize outdoor space and put the big screens back up on, you know, more or less stage rigging in a bunch of places. But you were able to get people gathered and they watched those games, right? Hey, here's a hangout to go. And it's the first time we've been able to do that for a year. So yeah, the Saturday night took over. And then you get to a Monday, people are back at work, people are grinding through, and the game never really, look, and take nothing away from what Baylor did today. Right. And that's, you know, I have to triple underscore that point in all of this. It's not taking away from the dominance that they displayed. It was, as a game, unless you're a Baylor fan or you bet them or you pick them in the pool, there wasn't a lot of excitement and a juice to the game as it went on. You had that early run. It gets down to 10 at halftime, and then spurtability, they're gone again. By the way, we said that on the show years ago. Suddenly
spurtability.
That's suddenly been co-opted again, because I remember getting crap for it, going, oh, you're making up words. I'm like, that's what we do in sports radio. And then they go and absolutely steal it. jerks. But the I should have trademarked it. Just didn't. Patent pending. Obviously didn't work as it's supposed to on the airwaves. But the idea that the Saturday's game, I mean, there's just so many reasons that it'll be the one that gets remembered. And Baylor, you know, they now get to be that next spot on the Wikipedia page as best teams to not.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. And, you know, look, while one shiny moment was disappointing, we had the big moment from Gonzaga. Look, like I said, that moment, that game is immortal. That game will live forever. So that's the one big win you can say for Gonzaga. But here's the thing now. We take a breath for a second. We finished the college basketball season. Right? It was a season that we didn't know what we were going to get. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if we were going to be able to finish it in the beginning of the year. It was frustrating. It was anxiety-ridden. It was thrilling. It was unquestionably an event that we had no idea where the ending was coming. And in the end, we had an incredible tournament filled with upsets. We had one walkover game, which unfortunately that was going to happen. We had a thrilling Elite Eight. We had a game for the ages in the Final Four. We had a big blowout win on National Championship night that ended a team's quest for perfection. No matter what we went through, this is college basketball again, standing up and planting a flag and saying, we have the best postseason in the world and nobody else can touch it. And there's the flag and they can say, look at what we did. We had COVID. We had teams that didn't want to play. Coach K didn't want to play. Nobody wanted to play. But then we played, and it was great. And we had great teams, and we had questions, and we had surprise teams, and we had a shortened season, but we still figured it out. We had a tournament that didn't have that many snubs. We had huge upsets. We were able to pull it off despite the fact that fans couldn't show up. We had so many people watching on television because we had Syracuse and UCLA on late nights all the time, and that's what worked out. And we got this national championship. Again, you can say we have the worst regular season in sports. We're not going to argue that with you. But we got the best postseason in any sport, profession, or college, and we pulled it off again. Drop the mic. We did it.
Nicely done. College buckets. You know, look, it's we talk about regionality when it comes to sports, right? And how excited you can be. Major League Baseball, why does Tatis's injury breakthrough? Because he's a national guy, right? He's a guy that everybody's picked up, whether you've invested in trading cards, NFTs, autographs. You're looking at the Padres to try to break through because you're tired of the Dodgers winning the West. Whatever your reasons are, you got on board that bandwagon. For college buckets, you look at it, that and college football, we've always talked about it in regional. You've always made fun of Thursday night football to that of, all right, here it is. It's the AFC South game on a Thursday night. Just the reality, right, that you're not wrapping your arms around America. And when we got through this college season, we had a few stories, a few players, a lot about Luka Garza and what he was doing in Iowa. And then we talk about teams and what Gonzaga was doing. But it became the wait and see, right? Because we've had a lot of big years from Gonzaga and trying to get over. And this is another of trying to get over, and they didn't. And Baylor takes them down. But they're a continued story. Why? Because they're a year-to-year powerhouse. But it's still a regional subject matter, right? In the Midwest, talking about the Big Ten. We talked about it here, you know, at Fox Sports Radio. Why? Because I'm a Big Ten honk. But also they had four or five teams in the top 10 or 12 most of the season. So they helped perpetuate a thought of, all right, well, what are we doing here in college buckets? What happened to the rest of the heavyweights? And then you mentioned all the veteran coaches, because really, during the regular season, who do we talk about more? The veteran coaches and their hissy fits at press conferences and trying to demean reporters, Boeheim, as opposed to smiling Jim and Buddy towards the end of the year. So congratulations, just everybody, for pulling it off. Just a fantastic tournament, a lot of highs, lows, and just like I predicted, my picks for the bracket, I was great for a weekend, and then I sunk like a stone.
Speaking of the brackets, now the Baylor Bears are champs. Fox Sports Radio's M-Drive Million Dollar Bracket Challenge is now complete. There weren't any perfect brackets. I mean, I was close, but once Syracuse lost, that ended my perfect bracket. But we have three winners taking home a combined $1,500 in gift cards. And Aaron Torres, who's joining us an hour from now, Fox Sports Radio college basketball insider, who, let's face it, he shouldn't be allowed to be in with us because he's kind of an insider and expert. He won the host bracket by a wide margin, thanks to his bracket having Baylor beating Gonzaga in the title game. Be sure to check foxsportsradio.com for the final standings. It's the M-Drive Million Dollar Bracket Challenge. Refine your prime with M-Drive. So we'll have more on this game coming up next because, look, it Baylor wins and Gonzaga's shot at perfection is gone. But there are so many big stories in the world of sports today. We had a huge trade in the National Football League. We had a huge firing from ESPN and Paul Pierce. We'll get to all of that coming up here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
Hey, buddy.
The Baylor Bears are your national champions, and we're going to get back into the Sam Darnold trade and Paul Pierce and all that kinds of stuff in a couple of seconds, but... You know, one thing that's starting to take over a bit on social media, I just shake my head and I go, man, people just want to hate, right? Pepperdine is trending, right? Pepperdine. Now, look, Pepperdine, I've seen that campus. Oh, my goodness. If I could go anywhere, I'd go to Pepperdine. But then
you wouldn't get anything done.
No, I wouldn't because I'd be out of school in a month. I would say, but I've been on the beach for the last month. Yeah, you got to go to class. Oh, really? Oh, that's a thing. Oh, wow. Didn't know that. All right, I'm going back to the beach. Well, you're out of school. Again, I'm paying for it, right? I mean, Pepperdine is the most beautiful campus I've ever seen. But Pepperdine is trending because it's in the West Coast Conference, and there's a big push online of, oh, here are the Gonzaga Bulldogs who didn't play anybody. All right, they didn't play anybody. The regular season did them no favors. And I'm like, this is just somebody. You're just stupid. You just look awful. Like you haven't watched a second of college basketball all season long. Okay, because all you got to do is just don't even look at the games. Just look at the schedule. Okay, just look at who they've played this year. Yes, they played a whole West Coast Conference schedule. BYU was a sixth seed in the tournament, and Gonzaga beat them three times. All right, but let's forget about that for a second. They played and beat Kansas, who was a three seed in the NCAA tournament. They played and beat West Virginia, who was a three seed in the NCAA tournament. They played and beat Virginia, who was a four seed in the NCAA tournament. They played and beat Iowa, who was a two seed in the NCAA tournament. In the tournament, they beat Oklahoma, Creighton, USC, and UCLA. Yes, it'd be Pepperdine. But these are the teams. This is a third of their schedule outside a conference. All right. And you're talking about Kansas, West Virginia, Virginia, Iowa, all 2-4 seeds in the tournament. And then the teams they beat in the tournament, Oklahoma, Creighton, USC, who was playing as good as anybody going into that game. And they survived that game against UCLA, which just went through everybody with their four guard lineup. So really, you can't sit here and tell me, oh, they didn't play anybody. They would have been tougher for March. They had every single kind of game you could imagine, right? They had close games. They had blowout games. They had a close game in the Final Four when they know full well, hey, we can't take anything for granted going into this game against Baylor on Monday night. They barely escaped against UCLA. They had everything. They just lost tonight. And Baylor beat them because they were the better team. There wasn't anything Gonzaga didn't do or anything they could have done or anything they could have done with their schedule. They played a game tonight. They played their B-minus game and Baylor played their A game and Baylor's the national champions.
Gonzaga outshot them 51% to 44.8. Obviously, clouded a little bit because we hang out and see the 16 offensive rebounds that Baylor had over the course of the game. I mean, that was the tail of the tape. We talked about it early on, the rebounding margin, the loose balls, everything else. But they shot the ball pretty well. Some bad turnovers in the first half, and then they're never able to close the gap. It doesn't negate what they did the rest of the season. They matched up with a team, and dare I say it, maybe I'll be that guy. Maybe Baylor was the better team, right? No matter what the rankings said, no matter what the prognosticators said, all of that stuff. Maybe we just, the numbers and the algorithms didn't capture it all correctly. But it doesn't take anything away from what Gonzaga did all year long. I hate that, right? Oh, I meant nothing. They beat a bunch of bums. You ran off that list. Sure, it's a better resume than so many other teams that folks tried to prop up over the course of the year. So I just shrugged, man. Some of the hot take nonsense that starts to get air, and we certainly see enough of it that we just chuckle and I go, man, I really just need to go down that. Maybe that'll add a couple of zeros to my paycheck if I just say stuff that has no bearing in fact, right? And just kind of throw it out there. Yeah, okay, hey, look, I didn't do any research, but you know what? You can go and disprove it because I've already got my runs and clicks, and we see that on a daily basis. But, yeah, to try to push away from what Mark Few and this team did over the course of the year, come on now. You're just kidding yourself, and you're just looking to grab a nice, big, heaping cup of haterade. Celebrate what they did. Unfortunately, they didn't finish the job, right? So we put them in the list of the almost but didn't teams of our history and our collective sports memory, but they had a hell of a run. We're going to yell Timmy for the rest of time, and we're going to remember the shot. We're going to remember the shot. You can't take away all those things. And UCLA, by the way, folks, they were the projected number one team in the Pac-12 coming into the year. Go and look at everything that happened to that squad along the way. They weren't some also-ran. They just needed time to gel. Yeah, they gave away a couple of games late in the season. Yes, that was a bad run in this. 22-10. How good were they? That was a pretty good team, as you saw. So, but yes, Timmy and that mustache will be one of the memories indelibly etched into our brains forever. Congratulations to Baylor. They beat another number one seed. Do I need to underscore that too? There was another number one seed that beat them. It wasn't some 12 seed that, you know, they were doing Harlem Globetrotter trick shots trying to make things happen. Or suddenly there was a rockin' jock option that they just had the one sharpshooter that won his lot at carnivals. Come on now.
And I don't know what Drew Timmy is doing, but he has a bucket. It could be confetti. It could be water. Meanwhile, Baylor gets another dunk. Oh, my goodness. Timeout, Mark Few. Oh, it's confetti. Oh, no, wait, it's water, and Mark Few is soaking wet. Timeout, Bulldogs. They want to talk it over. You know, that would have been kind of fun.
That would have been good.
I mean, just asinine.
some of the stuff and the takeaways from games. Like, okay, did you watch? Did you just look at a box score? Did you go out for dinner, not pay attention, and then figured you needed to use your blue check mark to start flame wars just because? And all of you listening, your producers for those shows, you know who I'm talking about.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
The Sam Darnold trade came down today. I mean, look, I petitioned the NCAA to have the game played tomorrow night because, you know, I wanted 4 hours on Sam Darnold. I didn't get it, so, you know, it's what we have. And look, you know my opinion of Sam Darnold after this is over. You can make all the excuses for him in the world you want to. I had moved on from Darnold because he just wasn't good. And still today, it stunned me to see social media, good for Sam, trending after the Sam Darnold trade. Oh, now Sam's away from the Jets, and look how good he's going to be. Oh, he's going to be great with the Panthers. Time out for a second, all right? You know, trust me, who's seen every single start Sam Darnold has played over the course of his last 3 years with the New York Jets. Sam Darnold wasn't very good. The guy's the lowest-rated quarterback in the National Football League. Okay, he didn't have any string of games together that made you thought, okay, maybe he's getting it. Does the guy have talent? Yeah, he does. He wouldn't have been the third overall pick in the draft if he didn't. But he has been a bad quarterback. You have three full seasons of data and game film on him. Three full seasons in which he was hurt for at least three games in every year. Whether he was hurt or he was sick, he still missed time. He has problems staying healthy. He has a problem moving the offense. All right, he didn't have any 300-yard passing games this year. This is the era of the quarterback. And this is a season in which the Jets were losing by 30 points in every game. And you couldn't have one garbage 300-yard passing game? He couldn't. He wasn't good. Were the Jets good? No. Was Adam Gase a good head coach? No. But even the most generic of quarterbacks can throw for 300 yards and a couple of touchdowns in a game where their team is getting boat raced by 30. And Darnold couldn't do it. He missed open receivers regularly. And I don't mean overthrew them. He didn't see them on the field, whether it was he couldn't go through his progressions or not. But there's guys who were open. It wasn't like there was nobody open because every wide receiver is like the Hamburglar. There's all 5'5 guys running around going, hey, 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 hey. Darnold simply wasn't very good, all right? And for all the excuses I've seen from him, he's the Jennifer Aniston of quarterbacks. Let's make excuses for all the bad movies Jennifer Aniston has done throughout her career after Friends. Okay, let's make all the excuses. It's like, let's make all the excuses for Sam Darnold. Okay, so what you're telling me is that, yes, I get it, the Jets stunk. But the entire organization, it was the GM, it was the head coach, it was all the other players, it was the game planning. It was all of these things, but it wasn't the quarterback. Really? Just think about that for a second, okay? Joe Douglas was a very highly respected personnel evaluator before he went to the Jets. But he goes to the Jets, people go, oh, Jets, yeah, Joe Douglas. Yeah. No, Joe Douglas was really well respected in the NFL, okay? Robert Saleh, very well respected in the National Football League. He got to see Sam Darnold up close in a game earlier this season. Just think about it. You think the entire team, it's everybody else's fault. Two different head coaches, it's everybody else's fault. It's just not Sam Darnold's. I mean, that's just ridiculous. That's liking a guy and wanting to make excuses for him because he has a likable personality. And I like Sam Darnold. He's a good dude. He knew how to handle New York. He never complained. He never got frustrated. He never said the wrong thing. He never demanded a trade. He never did any of these things. But you know what? This is kind of what you're supposed to do. But it's like because he was this and you felt bad because he didn't say anything and Adam Gase was terrible, it was, oh, yeah, yeah, it's all everybody else's fault. I mean, let's just stop for a second. Because if Sam Darnold really was that well sought after and the Jets wanted to trade him, everybody would have fallen all over themselves to go get him, right? They would have said, here's 3 first-round picks for Sam Darnold. You want to get rid of Sam? Here's 3 firsts. Here's 2 firsts this year. Here's 2 seconds. Here's a couple of players. And instead, the guy went for a second and a fourth and a sixth, right? That's the reality of Sam Darnold. He is not a great quarterback. He's one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. I hope well for the guy because, like I said, he was a good guy. But to think suddenly, oh, I feel that he's going to be great just because he's not on the Jets, I mean, just think about what you're saying when you say that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to the idea of the number of coordinators he's dealt with, the instability of the organization, the ineptitude of the organization. There's a lot. We could go after it and take both the Jets and, to a great degree, USC, and we can bat them like pinatas. We can have fun with that all we want. But you're still looking for that growth. You're still looking for the guy to step forward in adverse scenarios, right? Quarterbacks make plays even when they're on crap teams, right? Joe Burrow was fantastic. Look what was around him, and certainly the offensive line that got him bludgeoned. And there's a couple of pieces that you might get excited in terms of the weaponry that he's got there. But overall, not a good squad right now. But what did you see? You saw a guy that was able to come in and make plays. Justin Herbert, there's playmakers. That's a great-looking team. But he was a guy that came in as a, all right, break glass in case of emergency kind of situation, and he went out and he shone and never gave the seat up. And so many other guys that have done that, and he said, all right, not the best personnel around, but you can at least see glimpses. With Sam Darnold, there were a couple, but he never really strung it together like you would have liked. And certainly you as a Jets fan, you can speak to that better than I. Once, even if we remove all the emotions, there still goes back to, you know, fact. So when we look at Sam Darnold going to Carolina, hopefully they're building the stable environment. They've certainly got better playmakers. There's nobody that's going to be able to argue any different than that. Matt Rhule, college guy in year two, and you're hopeful that there's stability on the offensive, you know, the coordinator and the position coach or whatever else. But don't forget, they were also getting looks at other NFL clubs this offseason. So how long are they there? Right? You know, even if he doesn't succeed at the highest level, are you still going to have, you know, Brady there to help his development for a second year? Will he be there? You know, they gave him the fifth year option and exercise, and that's great. But now he's got to go beat out Teddy Bridgewater unless he gets dealt. And I don't see how much different a guy they are. in terms of winning and pushing your team forward. Is it a better scenario? Sure. But it doesn't mean, as I've seen so many do, that you just take away that it was everybody else's fault. No, you had 3 years of data. All right, put Mono in there. That takes away some of it.
Yeah.
But for Sam Darnold, it's put up or shut up time as a professional, right? We can bemoan the idea of Josh Rosen. That guy legitimately never got a chance, right? Bad team and never saw the field again with any level of stability and has now bounced around the league. So I can feel bad for him to a degree because we don't know because we didn't get to see a long, you know, a straight body of work with the with Sam Darnold. No, we've seen a lot of games. There's a lot of film on him. And he saw ghosts. See how long it took for me to even bring that up?
No, look, he saw ghosts. Look, all of it is, it falls under the category of this, all right, with Sam Darnold. And just think about this more about the team's plan. The Jets know him better than everybody else, right? The Jets know him better than everybody else, and they still decided we need to move on. Now, is there a strategy there? Sure. Hey, we start the clock over with a rookie quarterback, and Zach Wilson's rookie contract is going to go through. We're not paying a quarterback. Yeah, there's strategy. But if Sam Darnold was the guy, they would have kept him. They would have figured it out. They would have extended his last year, and they would have said, we're going to get a playmaker at number two and all of these things. It just would have happened that way. They know him the best, and they traded him. All right, that should be what you need to know. Feeling sorry for a guy and thinking he's going to be great are completely two different things. But it's like that melds its way together because, oh, I feel bad for him. So, yeah, I get it. But really, you're going to look at the last 3 years and tell me, yeah, this guy looks great? I mean, like I said, if he was great, people would have traded more for him. It would have been a bidding war for him. And it wouldn't have been the Jets saying, well, we took him number three overall 3 years later, we're turning him to a 2, a 4, and a 6. It would have been different.
Well, you take what you can get. It's a depressed market at this point.
That's right.
Well, but it is, right? A lot of other teams have filled. How many seats are there really available to go compete for a starting job? As much as I'd like to tell you it's the Bears, they're committed so much over the top to Andy Dalton. They're offering to, you know, just tattoo everybody with that at this point. He's number one on their foreheads, I think, for the next press conference you see from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. But there weren't very many options. And those that need a quarterback, guess what? Including the Jets, you're sitting in a prime position to go and draft the guy you think is next to try to grab some energy and excitement. So what are you going to do? You're going to go and do it. Could you have built around Sam Darnold? Maybe. Maybe not. But you have the number two overall pick. And what does New York love more than anything? The sexy newest thing, the newest club, the newest Broadway show, and now a shiny new quarterback in gangrene.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
But speaking of baseball, look, we'll have more coming up. Look, we got the big Paul Pierce story coming up, as well as more on Gonzaga and Baylor. But we have a big $340 million dilemma where everybody is holding their breath after what happened to Padres star shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr. tonight. Hurt himself taking a hard swing and immediately left the game against the Giants. He struck out swinging, you know, reached across the plate for a ball and immediately fell to the ground, cradled his left arm while he got up. Two trainers helped him off the field. All right, now, hopefully he is okay. It looks like it could be an arm, some kind of shoulder injury. He did have a bad shoulder or a shoulder injury earlier in the spring. He came back after a couple of days, so it wasn't that bad. But you have to wonder if this is part of it, and you don't know how much longer he's going to be out. And hopefully he is good. He is great for the game, and we're hoping that he comes back. I need to go back to what we said when Fernando Tatis got this $340 million contract. okay? Because this is why we're talking about him. If it's just Fernando Tatis gets hurt, it's not a big headline. But it's crazed because they gave him $340 million. Right. And what did we say at the time for Fernando Tatis? The deal that should have been for him was more of a Ronald Acuna 10-year, $100 million deal, because that's what you do. Hey, listen, you get paid a lot earlier, but you're also helping us out later on in this deal. But the Padres paid him like he was Francisco Lindor or Bryce Harper, who had shown 5 or 6 years of staying healthy and showing that you're a superstar. Right, because the thing with Fernando Tatis, and we said it when it happened, was that you're paying a guy that has barely played the equivalent of one season in Major League Baseball. All right, Fernando Tatis played 84 games in 2019, and he played 59 games last year. All right, that's one full season, and he was great. He's great so far. He's hitting 300, 40 home runs, 99 RBI. He's been terrific. But the reason guys get $340 million contracts in their mid-20s is because the two things they have shown is that we are consistent with our stardom, and we are consistent with what we do out on the field, and we show that we can stay healthy. And that's why this is such a big deal right now, because, oh my goodness, you gave Tatis $340 million. That's why we're talking about him, is because he's got this kind of contract. I hope he's, I really do. Of course I do. I hope he's great. He's great for baseball. He's got a great personality. The guy is so bleeping exciting. But you could tell this spring, he wasn't right. He had 5 errors in his first 4 games. The shoulder injury that kind of lingered. He wasn't swinging the bat well. How banged up is he? Is he going to need surgery? What's it going to be? These are big questions, and they're big questions because of the contract. That's why we're talking about this the way it is.
Yeah, you and I, you know, for the years that we've been on the show together, my consistent thing in all sports is I don't want to pay a guy until I have to. Right, I understand the business of it. And when we talked about Tatis's contract specifically, it was, I get the logic, right? Make the splash, make him the guy, perpetuate the face of baseball, and hey, Dodgers, we're here for you. And we ain't going away anytime soon. And you avoid all the potential problems down the line when he's outplayed the contract. Because that always comes up, right? Guys are mashing and saying, well, I'm making, you know, peanuts. When I should be making, you know, here's where my stats are commensurate, you know, with the other guys at my position and what they're getting paid. So there were a lot of, from a business perspective, I guess you could say, all right, let's fall in line and let's just get it done. But how many times have we talked about Wentz and Goff and so many guys in the NFL was like, why are you, Todd Gurley, why are you paying these guys before you have to? Right? Why are you doing it? And then certainly for baseball, there's always the fight over the time in the minor leagues and holding guys back, service time questions. This is a, you decided to make your statement. Unfortunately, you bet big into a pot, and right now you're holding your breath, hoping this is a short-lived injury. David Chow, Dr. Chow, who joins us on Fox Sports Radio, you know, he talked about it and initially analyzed it as a shoulder thing that could eventually require surgery. But maybe he can play through it. Either way, a very scary moment for all of Major League Baseball.
Twitter at How About a Fresca? Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Coming up next, we have more on the huge Baylor win over Gonzaga, how it happened, why it happened. Plus, I'll take you behind the curtain for the surprise Paul Pierce firing at ESPN. That's coming up next right here on Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.